Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Elodie Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Friday, January 13th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
You think we had a little bad luck in gold today, maybe?
Nah. No, I don't think so.
Actually, it tried. We did...
in the green, it's positive, not big time, but it's good. Up is up. I'm happy about up.
We had a 1201.60 for the high today, but we did manage up 290 at 1198.90. So almost $3 at 1199. Silver was up 7 cents at 1691. We didn't breach 17 like we did yesterday, but we're still at 1691. So almost. Platinum up 8 at $987. Palladium was down 7 at 755. The USDX today was trading a little bit weaker, 0.16, 101.23. Crude oil was down 46 cents at 52.55. And the paper markets today, they struggled also. So we had 2 days of struggles. And the Dow was down 6 points at 19,884. The NASDAQ was up 26 at 55.74. The S&P was up 4 at 22.74. Well, some news out today. Wells Fargo was planning to shut down more than 400 bank branches by the end of 28. That's on top of the 84 locations it's pulled the plug on in 2016. So they made that announcement today. And I guess it is a reflection of people preferring to do banking online. You just have to be insane, but what do I know? And, of course, people like it. And, of course, the mobile banking these days, they also like that. Under Wells Fargo, its chief rival, Bank of America, and J.P. Morgan Chase, have been a lot more aggressive in shutting branches in recent years. But Wells Fargo says it hasn't been the decision to close these banks is not because of the bank's fake account scandal. So they are basing it on online sales, which I would have to agree to that. That scandal didn't hurt Wells Fargo. I mean, cut me a break. In 2018, Wells Fargo plans to shut down slightly more than 200 branches. They want to save about $2 billion a year. So,
kind of narrow-minded of them, isn't it?
Yeah, how dare they want to save when they're not even paying? Are they going to raise their rates, their interest rates to people with savings account?
No, they'll raise their fees.
Yeah,
that's going to go up our fees.
Absolutely.
Yep. And there, it's evidence that the public is becoming increasingly digitized in its banking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they don't need to go to a bank anymore. They can just dial it up like anything else on the internet.
Yep. Today, the producer price index gained 0.3% in December, matching the median projection of economists. Of course, there was a 0.4% advance the prior month. This report was produced by the Labor Department that was released today. The measure was up 1.6% from a year earlier, and this actually is the most since September of 2014. And this is a sign that the broader measures of inflation, is going to continue to rise, and it's approaching the goal of the Federal Reserve, if you want to call it their, what they perceive.
They recommend
as a
prescription for good economic health.
Yeah, the right level of inflation that this country has. And if everybody believes that we're really holding on to a lesser than 2% inflation rate, well, anyway, let's see. Energy prices rose 2.6% from the prior month. Gasoline prices jumped 7.8%, accounting for about half of what the December rise in goods was. Foods did show a little bit of a 0.7% increase, and that is the most since last January. So you're even beginning to see a little more food inflation since last January. Wholesale prices, excluding food and energy, rose 0.2%, and the previous month was 0.4%. And those costs were up 1.6% since December of 2015. Services inflation moderated. Trade services producer costs rose 0.1%. That's if you exclude food and energy. Let's see what else is interesting they have. The core measures increased by 1.7%. So, you know, hey, inflation is coming, folks. And, you know, everybody talks about the trillions of dollars that are sitting on the sideline in cash. What do you think is going to happen when that cash begins to come into these markets? It's like, baby, we're going to see inflation like we've never seen before. So hang on. But
got an article on the U.S. economy, a couple of articles actually, that don't entirely agree. What they're interesting from that perspective is the economy doing well? Is it doing badly? What's going on here? There's one from Ms. Shedlock. He says, Christmas fizzles, retail sales except autos, gas fall flat. That's the headline. According to the Census Department Advanced Monthly Sales for Retail and Food Services report, there was a disastrous Christmas for department stores, sporting goods, electronics, appliances. There was an unexpected, it was expected that we would have a strong Christmas. Economists were giddy across the board, but other than autos and gas, retail sales were flat in December. Now, flat's not terrible. Just saying, well, it didn't do much better than we did last year, but flat is not terrible, but nevertheless, it's being presented as, you know, the word disastrous was used. It's not my word. I didn't add the word to the report, and I don't think it was a disastrous Christmas season, but it was not, you know, a powerfully optimistic Christmas season either. And in short, he said, Christmas hype did not live up to its billing. Retail sales minus autos were 0.2% down, below the lowest economist's estimate. Retail sales minus autos and gas were flat and 0.3% below the lowest economist's estimate. The economists had been optimistic, didn't work out that way. Amazon, however, had a great Christmas season, so did car dealers, but the box retailers, meaning conventional brick-and-mortar stores, according to Shedlock, they got clobbered. One of the points about this is there are stores with semi-famous names that you and I recognize and may have seen for years that are going to at least be closing branches and maybe closing out entirely before the next Christmas sale, you know, 10, 11 months from now. We'll watch and see, but this does not bode well for brick-and-mortar stores. They're not all going to die, but there's going to be a problem. Here's a second article from Bloomberg. And although Christmas was a little shaky, Bloomberg says U.S. Small Business Optimism Index surges by most since 1980. Optimism among America's small businesses soared in December by the most since 1980 as expectations about the economy's prospects improved dramatically in the aftermath of the presidential election. The National Federation of Independent Businesses Index jumped 7.4% last month from 98.4 to 105.8, the highest since the end of 2004. More companies also said they plan to increase investment and keep hiring, which reflects optimism surrounding President-elect Donald Trump's plans of spurring the economy through deregulation, tax reform, and infrastructure spending. However, let me one more point. We haven't seen numbers like this in a long time. Juanita Duggan, president and chief executive of the NFIB, said in a statement, small business is ready for a breakout. And that can only mean very good things for the U.S. economy. Business owners are feeling better about taking risks and making investments. However, here's a third article. This is from Gains, Pains, and Capital. And the headline is confirmed. The U.S. is officially in a recession. Right? And they say the U.S. is officially in a recession. This won't show up in the official data because the official data is a fiction. You won't hear it from the mainstream media and you won't hear it from the government, but they claim we're already in a recession. And they say GDP numbers might as well be in a Harry Potter novel. They're inaccurate and ridiculous. But if you want to see what's really happening in the real economy, you need to look at tax receipts. And I think that's a very good observation. I think that's a nice insight. If you want to find out if the economy is going up, check to see how much money is the government taking in revenue. And if they're taking in more than they did last year, then the economy is improving and it's not in a recession. If they're taking in less than they took in last year, and the actual and the revenue rate is declining as a percentage of last year's gross revenue, that's evidence that we're in a recession. They point out that current tax recess tax changes in tax receipts as compared to the previous year have only gone negative four times in the past 35 years. That'd be 1982, 2001, 2008, now 2016. In each of the previous three instances, 1982, 2001, 2008, there were where tax revenues actually went negative as compared if they fell below what they had been the previous year. We also experienced recessions. The implication is that the current decline in tax revenue is solid evidence that we are already in another recession, even if economists and mainstream media have so far failed to report that recession. According to Gaines, Paines, and Capital, we only see these negative years when we are in a tax revenue years, when we are in a recession. And they say the investors who believe that the GDP growth 5% is right around the corner are marching like lambs to the slaughter. What do you think, Melody? Are the investors headed like lambs to the slaughter, or is this excessively pessimistic?
Well, no, I don't think so. I mean, I do. They've been heading there for a long time. I mean, we've never really come out any of our recessions since.
I agree.
You know, since the 70s or 80s, it's just been disguised by excessive debt, new programs that are created that funnel money into certain areas, and voila. Mm-hmm. But the true recession is still there. My only question about his theory, and when you see a change in the tax revenue, is, you know, what happens when Trump does tax cuts? You're going to see a reduction in tax revenue. So you can't, how does that support when you see a decline in tax revenue? And I don't know if we've had it in 2017, but I know 2016, but I know for a few years or quarters there were record tax revenues coming in. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that has recently reversed.
Well, there's a difference between the tax rate can go down.
It's the tax
and it's
revenue.
Happened before when they reduced the tax, the income tax rate, that the revenue actually increases because the economy is stimulated and we have more business going on, and even though the rate is lower, the actual total revenue is higher. But
if they don't get the revenue, they have to get the revenue somewhere. See, I believe when they have tax cuts.
I know, but it could happen.
They're just going to change. They're just going to change it to get it someplace else. They need the money.
Watch and see. It's just an interesting argument, that the thing to watch. If you want to find out what's happening to the economy, what's happening to tax revenues, they're arguing it's one of the strongest and least manipulable, if there is such a word, indices for economics, right? What's the tax revenue doing? Going up, going down? Going up, we're not in a recession. Going down, we are.
I mean, I think, too, it's probably one of the truest areas and numbers that are produced. But, you know, I have to disagree a little bit with this theory. But
watch and see. Watch and see. It's not prophecy. It's just somebody's opinion. That's all it is. But, well, I thought it was a good insight.
Mm-hmm.
Something to pay attention to. Here's another small item. And this is another one where you shake your head and roll your eyes, and my God, I never thought I would live to see anything like this. Here's something from Technocracy News, and the headline is, Human Rights for Robots as Electronic Persons. European technocrats have determined that advanced robots must be classed as electronic persons so they can be regulated like everyone and like everything in society. A European Parliament committee has voted in favor of a draft report that proposes granting legal status to robots, categorizing them as electronic persons. The draft report proposes that the most sophisticated autonomous robots could be established as having the status of electronic persons with specific rights and obligations, including that of making good any damage they may cause. In other words, if you get hit by a robot, you can sue the robot. Rights have, they have right to hit you in certain circumstances, perhaps. I don't know. That's not true, but they have some rights, but they also have liabilities, and we're going to have electronic persons. This was authored by Luxembourg MEP Lady Delvaux. The report proposes definitions and outlines rules that govern how robots interact with humans. Now that humankind stands on the threshold of an era that it claims will see artificial intelligence unleash a new industrial revolution, artificial intelligence developers will have to ensure that their creations follow a set of rules that prohibit them from harming a human or allowing a human to come to harm through their inaction. Artificial intelligence can protect their own existence under the rules, but if this does not harm any humans. An opt-out mechanism or kill switch is also proposed in the report, ensuring that any rogue robots can be turned off easily, provided the designer hasn't let their artificial intelligence outsmart them. These people are serious! Rogue robots. You understand? This is like a Flash Gordon film out of the 1940s. We've got a rogue robots running around here, and we're preparing for that. One researcher claimed robots will not totally replace humans in the workplace. Good news, Melody. We're not going to be completely replaced by robots. Instead, there will be a cooperation between robots and humans. So, and the author, this is me, Mrs. Devereaux. She says, I imagine that everyone can learn to work together with robots. The robots
can't
are your friend,
Melody.
Can't
we all get along?
Yeah, can't we all just get along? Yeah, that's exactly right. My God. I mean, this is happening. This is not fake news. This is happening right now. It's like, good Lord. I don't know what to make of it, Melody. Like I say, just hang on tight. It's like riding a roller coaster. Just say, wee, and, you know, see what's going to happen here. But these are interesting and extraordinary times where people are preparing to give robots rights. They're talking about this right now. And not just some science fiction writer, the people in the European Parliament. This is bizarre.
It really is bizarre. And you know what's sad is you have the youth that are just so enthralled with technology, and you know, they just think it's great. They want to be part of technology. You know, they want to become, and it's they've been entrenched in all these video games for how long? It's just not because we're older. You know, it's just not that generation.
Well, I hope it's not. I hope it's not just because we're older, Melody. If it is, then maybe we'll be the first ones to go when the robots rule. Let's take a break for a couple of commercials. Melody and I will be right back. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoices.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
I just want to remind listeners, we got some great prices here. We have some, you know, 1 ounce silver rounds. We still have a few of those left. I mean, they're at a tremendous price. 1 ounce silver eagles. I mean, they're selling for a few pennies over wholesale. So come on, folks, give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. 2017 silver eagles will be, we should be receiving them next week so we can get them shipped out. And we've also been running some specials on the quarter ounce American gold eagles. So there's a lot to choose from, but you know, don't get caught up in, you know, that everything is great, fine, and dandy. And, you know, we're living in a new paradigm here that yep. Things have changed.
We'll be cooperating with the robots, Melody.
Yes, we will. It'll
be kind of like Dr. Doolittle. If I could talk to the robots.
Do you have to grease them?
I don't know if you do or not, Melody. It may be our job. We may become their man and woman servants. We'll be in charge of dusting them off and cleaning them back behind their bed where their arms won't reach the rest of this sort of thing. We can bathe them and lubricate them and entertain them. We'll be maybe like court jesters. Say, oh, look.
Maybe. Well, you know, I don't want to go any further than what I'm about to say. But I've seen, I don't even read the articles, but I see the headlines where they're talking about having sex with these robots. And it's like, are you kidding me? It's just bizarre. But anyway, like I said, I don't want to go any further. I might blush.
Oh, you're spoiling all my fun, Melody, because I could run with that. You know what I mean?
I know. That's why we're not.
That's the sort of thing that's grist for my mill.
We're not going there. Baby boomers. The millennial children are worse off than you. With a median household income of $40,000, millennials earn 20% less than boomers did at the same stage of life. Despite being better educated, according to a new analysis of the Federal Reserve data by the advocacy group Young Invincibles. The analysis is being released Friday. Today gives concrete details about a troubling generational divide that helps to explain much of the anxiety that defined the 2016 election. Millennials have half the net worth of boomers. Their home ownership rate is lower, while their student debt is drastically higher. Generational gap is a central dilemma for the incoming presidency. He has pledged to return the prosperity of post-World War II America, and the analysis also hints at the issues of culture and identity that divided many voters, showing that white millennials, who still earn much more than their blacks and Latino peers, have seen their incomes plummet the most relative to the boomers. It's a generation, and it, who's to say that every generation is supposed to be better than what our parents have? I mean,
it was the American dream.
They fed that idea to us.
And well, it was the American dream. It was the original American dream that each generation would live better.
That we could continue to better ourselves, but you do reach a point when, you know,
when your politicians crush your ability to be prosperous.
How many more cars can you get in your driveway? How many TVs?
Depends on how big they are, Melody.
So, I mean, there is a point and a peak to how much better we can be and how much.
Yeah, but it's not just. It's an average. It's an average.
Living a better life isn't all about how many TVs and cars that you can have.
What?
It's about rights and it's about freedoms. Those are the things that we've lost. That's what makes a better life. And yet, instead, we've lost so much.
You've been reading again, haven't you, Melody? Haven't we warned you about that? You should be watching TV with the rest of the populace and lusting for a new car, a new house, a new vacation, a new whatever.
I'm being serious, Al. So, I mean, no. So where do we go from here? I mean, we can only maintain our standard of living. But we know the government had wanted us to lower our standard of living, and they've succeeded.
Yep. They certainly haven't done anything reasonable to protect our standard of living. They've come up with excuses, and, you know, one of the things you have to look at, we have been in or near a recession since 2007, 2008. They admitted we had one right up front. They have since said that 2009, the recession was over and the recovery was starting or nearly getting ready to start. They haven't really improved this economy significantly in the past 8 years. Now, that's not just a testimonial to how much trouble we have. It's also a testimonial to either how incompetent our financial managers really are, and by financial managers I mean the government and the Federal Reserve, they are either extraordinarily incompetent or really don't want a recovery. Either case, we have a problem here where somebody needs to take these people and say, look, you either solve this problem or start looking for a country that doesn't have extradition laws. Something's got to be done. We can't just sit here and languish forever for God. You know, this is the United States of America. We should be able to deal with these problems without going on and on and on, or at least someone should admit what the problem is. And they haven't done any of that. They're not being honest with us about it. They don't give us honest economic numbers. They pump sunshine in our direction, smoke and mirrors and the rest, that sort of thing. And it is presumed that perhaps the lies will get us through this, but I think mostly they're just buying time. And it's just wrong. It's not just a question. You can't just excuse this as incompetence. There's something else happening here. This is being allowed to happen. It's been caused to happen, allowed to happen. I don't know which way it goes, but it's not just incompetence. This goes to people that are betraying this country to the New World Order. No proviso in the Constitution for our government to work on setting up a North American Union that includes Canada and Mexico and the United States. Ultimately, we'll start out, it'll just be commercial in the beginning, but it'll inevitably turn into a political entity. There's no proviso for that. This is treason. And yet we have people that are negotiating, that are implementing these objectives or trying to. And it's clearly contrary to the best interest of the American people. It might be great for major corporations, multinational corporations, and the New World Order, but it's terrible for the people of the United States of America. And we shouldn't be accepting it.
I wanted to say about the college educated, the proportion of 25 to 29 year olds with a college degree has risen to 35.6% in 2015 from 23.2% in 1990. That really has, you know, the challenges that these young kids have today, there's just nothing there for it. It makes you wonder. I mean, they go to college, but what do they major in? Can they really get a job off of what they majored in? And most of them can't. You know, they major in some sort of liberal arts or, you know, how to, you know, or some, you know, health social program that, you know, in today's world is just isn't enough to get a decent job. You know.
But the world is changing so fast.
Yeah,
I don't blame the kids for that. You can plot what your education is and what you want to do with your life 4 years from now. When I was a kid, you could do that. You could basically chart.
Sure.
If you wanted to be an aeronautical engineer, you go through college 4 years, get yourself a job as an aeronautical engineer. In theory, you might not work for the same company all your life, but in theory, you could hope and expect to work in the same occupation for all your life. Now, I don't see that that's even reasonable. The most important thing I think any youngster can learn is how to learn, and particularly how to educate themselves. Because you can't keep going back to college every 4 years for another 2-3 years, however many it takes to up your resume and increase your background, your curriculum background, the rest of that sort of thing. There has to be a way in this fast changing society. You have to find a way to educate yourself so you are constantly trying to stay even with the technology. I don't know that anyone can stay ahead of it, at least other than just temporarily. At least stay even, all right? But constant re-education, and ultimately you have to educate yourself. It's a situation right now where I think the average man, to hold his job, gets done with 8 hours work during the day. He comes home, he should probably be putting at least an hour, maybe 2 hours a night into some sort of a self-study program that deals with fundamental issues or advances in whatever field he's in. You got to do something. It's not enough just to go to work. You got to continue to educate yourself. And if you can do that, you know, you may be able to hold on to a standard of living, but this is so bizarre right now. I don't know. I don't envy these kids. I don't envy the millennials or anyone else right now. It is a difficult, difficult time and causes stress, predisposes people to engage in criminal behavior. And no one is really addressing this right now in a meaningful sense. They're just, well, let's just get what money we can. Belly up to the trough and get as much as you can for yourself and to heck with everyone else. This is contributing to a breakdown that's not going to serve anyone well.
But couldn't you also say this is another sign that perhaps, you know, one of the outs or relief from this problem would be to have a war?
Yeah, I don't know, but I mean, in some people's opinion, but I don't think, you know, do you want to go participate in a war? Does anyone want to?
No, but that doesn't. Well, no, that doesn't mean that the elite's not going to.
No, I know.
You know, say, hey, you know, we got to, you know, might have to take care of this problem because there's too many of them now that are, you know, that can't find work and so forth, a good quality work. So I don't know. It's just, I mean, I think we're in one of those times. And, you know, I talked yesterday when I did my 20 minutes, you know, a little bit on the hearings on Tillerson. And, you know, his and watching some news and reading some news later on, some of the other comments from some of the other cabinet, and I don't think they're going against Trump at all. I think they were being asked questions and they're answering. And I'll guarantee you that they're the same questions that Mr. Trump asked them. So I don't think it's any big surprise, and I don't think it can be used against them or to negative and so forth. However, the language is strong, and the language is no, telling China no. You're going to do this. You're not going to do that. Well, you know.
Or what?
Or China's going to react. So it's kind of interesting to, you know, it's.
I think people are going to generate a certain amount of humility before this is all over. Our problem is not with what other countries are doing, in my opinion. Our first order of business is straighten out what's going on in Washington, D.C. We straighten out our own problems. We can worry about China some other time. China is not our problem. Our problem
can be a big problem. It is a big problem because they own a lot of our debt. And if we begin to, you know, they can always hang that over our heads. And so, again, you'd have to say, well, they wouldn't do so something stupid to where they would lose so much money. Well, I guess they'd have to weigh to see which, you know, which... stream of action is going to affect them the most.
Oh, they have to account for their own populace also. They have more problems than we do. However many problems we have, China's in worse shape.
They have no problems on bombing or shooting. They're do you remember what Tiananmen Square?
Yeah, I remember. Well, but nobody actually got shot.
But they keep their, you know,
so far. But they're sitting on.
And when times get tougher, a billion plus people,
I don't know what the population is.
When times get tougher, they will make sure that that the people will, you know, the tougher the times are, the people will most likely accept what's given them.
China is a docile kind of country. I mean, it's something that there are some people that can be organized and there are some people that can't be organized. And China is someone who is a population that, by and large, can be organized. Right? They will put up with a bunch of stuff. You know, in our own Declaration of Independence, it says, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than take action to right themselves. That's probably not a... It says, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable, I got that much right, than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. In other words, people, and it's there in our Declaration of Independence. And what they're saying is the founders understood that people would put up with an enormous amount of crap, right? Oppression, abuse. They'll put up with just incredible amount before they finally say, all right, you SOBs, here we come, right? Revolution is a very, nobody wants it. Oh, a handful of people want it, but there's no significance. It really has to, the government has to really be extraordinarily abusive to push people in that. Well, I would say, if I had to guess, I would say that the Chinese are less likely to riot than are the people of the United States of America. That would be a guess. And I'm inclined to think that's probably correct. I think they are a docile people who will put up with an enormous amount of abuse, but they kind of have to, just because what are you going to do with so much, such an enormous population? I mean, the only solution to their population problem is they've got to thin their population. How do you do
well,
that?
Well, they don't seem they want to do it. It's like they want to grow it because they've changed their child policy.
Well, there's that, but even that, they still have more people than they know what to do with. And I've talked about this for the last 6 months or more, a report that China's thought they would probably have 80% of their workers in one of their most prominent industrial provinces. They expected 80% to be robots by 2020. Now, how can that make sense? You got people who are barely, you know, they're running around on wooden wheels in some places, and yet they're going to reduce, they're going to take away 80% of the jobs? I mean, the whole world is caught in a situation where there are too many of us, right? And for whatever reasons, the distribution of income, the actual amount of income that's being produced is insufficient. The distribution of income is not equitable. And I'm not sitting back arguing from each according to their ability to each according to their need. I'm just saying, look, there's a problem here. Millions of people are not getting fed. Millions, tens of millions, maybe hundreds of millions aren't being fed. They're going to riot. They're going to resort to violence because it's either that or they can die all alone in a corner without enough to eat. What are they going to do? And they were facing it on a global basis. We had, I think I have an article on, well, I don't have it right here in front of me right now. No, don't have it right here in front of me. On homelessness, right? Which has become significant in this country, and people talk about homelessness, and they say, oh my gosh, people are homeless. What about the illegal aliens that are coming up there? They're effectively homeless. What's happened to the refugees that are moving into Europe? They're homeless. This is a global problem. This is not just local. This is global. We're going to take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be right back. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival for Friday, last day of the week for us. And
Friday the 13th.
Friday the 13th, yeah.
And there was a sort of a bizarre coincidence on an airline, a flight. The flight bearing the number 666. It was...
That's like hotel rooms or hotels where they get rid of the 13th floor. We go from the 12th floor to the 14th. We don't have a 13th floor in the hotel. They shouldn't have airline flights that are numbered 666.
Well, let me finish.
Go ahead.
And it was a Finnair flight, took off from Copenhagen, and flew directly to Helsinki. So do you know what their call letters are? Helsinki?
H-E-L-L.
Well, it's just one L, H-E-L. So you had flight 666, and they went to H-E-L.
On the 13th.
Even on the 13th, on Friday the 13th. Even better, the flight took off at 1300 local time. The 1 hour and 34-minute flight landed at the Helsinki airport at 3:41 p.m. Helsinki time. Flight Trader 24, it's an account that tracks air traffic around the world. They even pointed out that the aircraft is 13 years old.
So how many people rode that airplane besides the pilots and maybe the stewardess? Did they actually get anyone to ride?
No, but they were actually going to look and see if there was anybody on there that was named Jason.
Mm-hmm.
So... Do you believe in coincidences? Perhaps in that case, but normally I don't. There is no such thing as a coincidence. So.
Yeah, they say there's no such thing as a unicorn either, Melody, but maybe there is.
I never heard that.
Well, I heard it.
There's no such
thing. I've heard it. I hear lots of things, Melody.
There's no such thing as a unicorn?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, man. It's kind of like learning that there's no Santa Claus.
Huh? No such thing as Rudolph, the red-nosed
and
reindeer.
And it really hurts when you're over that 50 mark. Anyway, hey.
If someone's over 50?
Well, I didn't want to say 60. You know, our listeners and my clients think we have a youthful. Anyway, let's move on.
Got an article from Blabberbuzz.
Now, let me just say this out. Bob Chapman always said I was young. So you have to take from his... You know, he always supported me and said that I was what? He always said I was 29. He says, you're 29, right? And I'd say, yes, Bob. So he knew how to treat a lady.
Well, he was an economist. Anyway. He was an economist, and he knew how to fudge the figures, right, in order to make things look a little more optimistic than might actually be the case. So, you know.
Hey, go ahead.
Go ahead. All right, we got an article from Blabberbuzz, which is not a credible-sounding publication, but it's reasonably, you know, it appears to be true. Radical left planning mayhem for Trump inauguration next Friday. Next Friday is the inauguration. According to the radical left, we want to shut down the inauguration. Massive security is being planned for Trump's inauguration. There's very good reason for that. In addition to fears of terrorist actions, the radical left... is planning a number of different actions for Inauguration Day. According to Reuters, thousands of demonstrators are expected to turn out in Washington next week for protests aiming to shut down the inauguration of Donald Trump. Protesters will attempt to close down 12 security checkpoints at the U.S. Capitol. Right? Are these people on drugs? Well, probably they are. I see You're going to try to close down 12 security checkpoints at Washington, D.C.? Is that right? I mean, I'm going to sit back and say, that I don't know. I don't think that's likely to work. You're going to need an awful lot of people, and even if you get them, I don't think you'll succeed at this. But in any case, and they also want to close down the 2.5-mile parade route down Pennsylvania Avenue. According to the leaders of a group called Disrupt, apparently I-20. We want to shut down, the inauguration organizer David Thurston told the news conference. We want to see a seething rebellion develop in this country, in the city, excuse me, and across the country. What do you think, Melody? Are they likely to succeed?
No, I don't think they will. And
I don't think they're even going to get many people to show up.
I think there'll be a lot of people there. I know bikers are supposed to be there and so forth. I think there'll be a good crowd there.
Well, there'll be a crowd, but are they demonstrators?
No, not demonstrators. Yeah. But, you know, the Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson said that, you know, they don't see any immediate threats at this inauguration. I mean, I think they're going to keep, you know, things pretty tight. They're going to plan so many barriers as to protect any type of truck attacks that these jihadists have done in France and Germany. You're going to have, you know, they're going to make sure that there's that it flows and that there won't be anything that happens. And
I am inclined to agree with you. And beyond that, we will watch and see what happens. But it looks to me like this will be another fantastic failure for the left. All right? They've really gotten beat up. They thought they could do anything they wanted to do with getting Hillary elected, and that didn't come through. And they've been angry about it.
Well,
and I think this is going to be another significant defeat and evidence that the left may not be anywhere near as potent as it had previously supposed.
Well, probably, but you know what? I mean, I get, you know, they need to move on and so forth and whatnot, but they do have a right to say what they want to say.
I agree with that.
I'm not supporting them at all by saying that statement. But, you know, and I listen to Rush Limbaugh, and I listen to Mark Levin, and they just go on and they string them apart and rip them apart. And it's like, hey, and there's a lot of things to say about what they say, not just that they're complaints, but sometimes they do say some things that are just like, what?
Yeah, I know.
You know, but they do have.
What are you smoking? What are you smoking?
If they're unhappy, you know, with the election, they do have a right to voice it. And
I agree, but they don't have a right to disrupt the inauguration.
No, they do not.
All right.
They do have a right to demonstrate.
Well, they probably do. Yeah, I agree with that. They have a right to demonstrate, but I don't believe they have a right to disrupt, and that's what they're asking for. They're saying they're going to disrupt. We want to see a seething rebellion develop in this city, meaning Washington, D.C., and across the country. Well, guess what? I think you're going to be lucky to get 500 demonstrators on this thing across the country. We'll watch and see. Oh, you can get many more than that.
But the part that normally at this time of the year it's cold, and nobody wants to go out. But it's supposed to be 50-some degrees during the inauguration. So you will have more people coming out and being in the streets and walking and so forth. So I think you will have more people show up just to be there, not to demonstrate and so forth. But you're going to have a lot more people out and about because of the warmer temperatures.
Well, I wonder how many firearms are going to have people. How many people will be carrying firearms?
I'm sure.
I don't even know if you can in Washington.
I'm sure you can't. You know, I'm sure you can't. And you know, so I mean, that to me, that doesn't even have anything to, you know, to play into it. So that's a separate issue. But so anyway, we'll see.
Got an article here from the Associated Press in London. And the headline is, World Economic Forum says capitalism needs urgent change. Now, I would disagree with this article in some regards. It's a well-written article. They make some interesting points, and we'll get to a few of them before we're done here. But if you want to change capitalism, I would suggest that the first order of business is you get some capital. The problem we have, we see this in the newspapers and magazines and whatever, and people thought, is capitalism dead or something like that? Capitalism isn't dead. Capitalism has simply been abandoned and put off to the side when the government changed our form of money from an asset to a debt. Capitalism depends on assets. Capitalism depends, in my opinion, to a significant degree, on something like gold and silver for a monetary system. I don't think you can have capitalism without gold and silver. I may be mistaken about that, but I think if you want capitalism, fine, give us some gold-backed money, gold-backed, silver-backed money, not just this debt-based crapola that they are foisting off on us and they've been getting away with for the last 40-some years. I think that problem with capital is they're not using any capital. The problem with capitalism is they're not using any capital. Right? Get back to gold and silver. It makes for an honest accounting. Right? Real numbers. Right? I think you can, and out of that truth, I think you can have an economy that functions effectively. The article says reforming the very nature of capitalism will be needed to combat the growing appeal of populist political movements around the world. This is from the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. Now, they are seeing that capitalism is something contrary to the populist movement that's been getting traction in Great Britain, getting traction in this country with Trump, Britain with Brexit. Other parts of the country, other parts of the European Union are threatening to break loose from the European Union. This is populism is rising, and they are seeing that as a threat to capitalism. They're seeing these things, and I don't see that the two, populism and capitalism, I don't see that they are antagonistic or inherently antagonistic, but the World Economic Forum apparently does. So getting a higher income or getting a higher economic growth is necessary but insufficient to heal the fractures in society that were evident in the election of Donald Trump as U.S. president and Britain's vote to leave the European Union. In a wide-ranging report from the organizer of the annual gathering of politicians and business leaders at the Swiss resort of Davos, the World Economic Forum identified rising income and wealth disparity as potentially the biggest driver of global affairs in the next 10 years. Now, why would that be? What rising income and wealth disparity? Well, they are looking at this and they're saying people understand that the top 0.1% are getting richer and richer and richer, and the majority are getting poorer. And when people understand that, they're recognizing, look, there's first class passage on this boat, and then there's steerage, and they want us to ride steerage while they stay in first class. And it creates for a certain amount of resentment. And that's what they're talking about here. They're saying we can't continue to just give money to the super rich and leave the rest of the people rot. And if insofar as we allow that to happen, the majority of the people lose confidence in the system. And it threatens the system. And they resort to populism. They say, "What's in it for us?" And if we have to vote against the establishment, if we have to take down the establishment, how about something for us? Right? And here we have the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, saying, "Yeah, these guys aren't kidding. These populists aren't kidding, and we've got to do something to include them in this in the U.S. and global economies." As an example of this growing inequality, the World Economic Forum highlighted the massive increase in CEO pay at a time when people in advanced economies have struggled to make ends meet following the global financial crisis. This points to the need for reviving economic growth, but the growing mood of anti-establishment populism suggests that we may have passed the stage where this alone would remedy fractures in society. Reforming market capitalism must also be added to the agenda. The combination of economic inequality and political polarization threatens to amplify global risks, fraying the social solidarity on which the legitimacy of our economic and political system rests. What they're saying is we can't come up with a new world order if we're going to just reward the people that are running multinational corporations. Something's got to be done to change the way the pie is distributed, to see that some of this is not just going to the super rich, but also going to people that are struggling just to survive and get by. And they say we need long-term thinking on capitalism. And what I think they mean by that, that's a quote from there, we need long-term thinking on capitalism. I think what they're saying is we can't afford to have the markets controlled by politicians who juice the market every couple of years to ensure their own re-elections. We've got to take a long-term view, and we can't just do stupid things that are good for incumbent politicians right now. We have to sit back and say, what's good for the country for 5, 10, 20 years into the future? And we aren't doing that. We are increasingly watching our economies manipulated and to the detriment of most people. They recognize the importance of identity and inclusiveness in political communities, and they want to strengthen global cooperation, meaning we all need to get along with the robots and the New World Order, Melody. They know what's best for us. They'll tell us what to do. And it added that a failure to address the underlying causes of the populist tide poses a threat to mainstream politicians, and I would disagree that they're mainstream. I would say that they are treasonous whores who are trying to create a new world order where there is no legal basis for doing so. And it raises the risk that globalization trend will go into reverse. Well, we're out of time. We can't go much further with this right now, but they're telling us that globalization is contrary to populism. And I think that's an extraordinary admission. I think it's an extraordinary insight. We'll see if it's true or false. We are out of time. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back next Monday. Hope you will tune in at that time. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you and me and Melody and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.